It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming plans here. As votes in the presidential election continue to be counted, we will report on developments and bring them to you throughout the day, throughout the week. Join us tonight at 8 for an NPR election update special with the latest news from around the country here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can also follow developments, including Wisconsin election results, at WPR.org. Right now, we're anticipating a wave of voting-related lawsuits in the wake of the election. The Trump campaign filed suits yesterday that seek to stop the counting of ballots in Michigan and Pennsylvania, contesting outcomes in two battleground states. We're turning to ProPublica's guide to election laws and lawsuits. What do you think about voting litigation and how it could affect the electoral process? It's 800-642-1234. Ian McDougall is a lawyer and contributing reporter at ProPublica. Ian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, dealer's choice where to start here. What have you seen in the aftermath with the litigation as it's coming out here in these hours?
So there are really two things going on. One is there's been a wave of new lawsuits filed really in the last day by the Trump campaign in a variety of states, including Wisconsin, although they said they filed one there. I haven't actually seen it yet. Also in Michigan, Georgia. And then the second thing that's going on is there were more than 300 lawsuits filed prior to the election. Mm-hmm. And many of them deal with sort of pandemic-related efforts to make voting safer and Republican opposition to some of them. And so there were a number of those that challenged these buffer periods after the election for when mail-in ballots that were mailed before the election could arrive. And those are still ongoing at the Supreme Court and at lower courts. And so those are sort of being reactivated, for lack of a better word, now as well.
So in this post-election, if you will, litigation, to get the courts to step in, the Trump campaign would need to raise specific legal objections under the Constitution or, you know, under a federal statute that could swing a state in his favor. What is at the core of these suits?
They're a bit all over the place. Okay. And really what they're trying to do is seemingly to either stop voting in some fashion by arguing our observers aren't given enough access to, you know, they really want to basically be able to roam around the canvassing rooms and look at ballots as much as they want, which judges have rejected before.
So stopping counting is what you're saying.
Yeah. So until they can basically flood these rooms with their observers. The other thing is, they're trying to get in Wisconsin, I think, a recount, which is technically close enough within the one percentage point margin. But if you talk to people who study this stuff, they'll say, you know, challenges to ballots, recounts, especially at the margins that currently exist in Wisconsin, they very, very rarely succeed in changing the outcome of an election.
So how, you know, did the courtroom battles prior to Election Day affect what we're seeing after Election Day, or is there very little correlation in the themes you're seeing of this litigation?
They are different in the sense that the state or the lawsuits that are being filed now in the various states are really for the most part under various state laws. Mm-hmm. that are in place for things like recounts or challenging ballots, things that you really couldn't raise before the election. The pre-election stuff was really much more focused on these kinds of various sorts of constitutional challenges, which have more or less merit, aimed at saying things like, this county is doing things different than this other county, and so that therefore is not, you know, uniformity in election practice across the state, or saying things like there's this novel theory that only the state legislatures can set election rules. And so any state court or state executive branch officer that gets involved is illegitimate somehow. And those have actually started to get a little bit of traction, but those are the kinds of arguments that have been raised. There are others as well under statutes, but those are sort of distinct from the ones that are coming out now.
Well, yeah, you know, uniformity in how we vote is not exactly our strong suit. I mean, it just varies straight across the country.
Yep. Yeah. And even within, within states, there's the, that most election codes say, you know, they set a set of rules, but then they leave a lot of discretion for local conditions, for, you know, each county to kind of figure out how best to fill in the gaps in that election code on their own.
We're talking with Ian McDougall, who is a contributing reporter at ProPublica. His latest piece looks at the states and laws that may determine the outcome and what litigation is on the horizon. How do you feel about the election lawsuits coming out after Election Day? Do you think it's fair? Should there be a recount? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ian, I'm following pretty closely this district judge in Washington, D.C. on the post office sweeps and what is being asked there in searching these, you know, 27 facilities in several swing states for outstanding ballots and to get compliance from the postmaster general. What is going on there?
Sure. I'll say I haven't followed that one as closely, but from what I understand, that, I'll say that judge is very fond of headline grabbing orders, but also it is troubling that you know, you see a lot of ballots not making it to election officials on time that were mailed before the election. On the other hand, I think there's been a lot of assumptions being made about this being unique, and I just don't know how this compares to past elections. I know there's often, you know, there are often issues with. You know, for example, the Postal Service sent out letters earlier this year, which I think they do every year or every election, saying to the state, saying, you know, your sort of rules currently make it, you know, run the risk that things won't get delivered on time. So I know that tension exists every election. I just don't know how much worse the numbers are this year versus prior years, and whether that's just because. You know, there are many more mail-in ballots sent this year versus these sort of the more untoward theories out there about what's been going on. So a lot of questions there still.
Let's head all the way back to 2000 and the U.S. Supreme Court deciding the outcome of the 2000 election, and seeking those manual recounts. What can we learn there from what happened, you know, with Al Gore?
I think there are two things. I mean, one is should make people fairly confident that, well, I shouldn't say confident, but should make people think that probably isn't going to happen again. You'd really need a situation where it comes down to one or two states that have really, really fine margins. I mean, I think in Florida it was something like 500 votes.
537.
537, you know, out of whatever, millions and millions. I don't know where ballots are still being counted, but right now it doesn't seem like that's especially likely to happen, but it certainly could. But you really need that kind of a very particular kind of situation for it to come down to a lawsuit like that. And there you had, you know, it was really about, I'll spare you the details, but it had a lot to do with sort of the way that the local courts were ordering recounts. And it was a very particular set of circumstances that could happen again, but doesn't seem particularly likely. The other lesson is, I mean, a lot of that was driven, I think, by kind of who controlled the media narrative. So you saw the Bush campaign quite impressively got out ahead. And when Gore and Lieberman were challenging the results, they called them sore losermen. That was sort of controlled this media narrative about that, you know, that Gore was just, you know, upset about losing and this was all sour grapes. And, you know, I think both the Democrats and Republicans internalized that, and you kind of see, I think, some of the lawsuits coming out now may be the Trump campaign trying to get control of the media narrative, which seems to be going towards or away from them, I should say.
Well, one law professor I was reading about called the suits a tweet with a filing fee. so that might be one way to look at that. But you know, just more seriously here, is this about finding sympathetic judges to really take your case to heart and finding a judge who perhaps has your bent, a conservative judge?
That may be their hope, but so far, actually, as that same professor said, you know, so far judges, conservative and liberal, have been very good about saying, okay, you say, for example, there's fraud here, or you know, wrongdoing is going on here. Let's see the evidence, and the campaign has often had either no evidence or has had sort of, you know, the equivalent of the Zapruder film from the JFK assassination saying, look at this, you know, this shadow here shows it. And the judges have said, come on, give me a break. And so I don't see, foresee a situation where you'd have a judge who would sort of, you know, sign off on just sort of a evidenceless claim of wrongdoing or fraud. Though they may hope they'll find that. The other problem they probably have is that, you know, a lot of the states where they're filing these lawsuits, the state Supreme Courts are not exactly tilted in their favor. That's not true in Georgia, but I think in all the other states it is more or less. Wisconsin is a little bit of an interesting one because it's technically a conservative majority, but it's I think two of those justices often go in different directions. So it's not a situation where they could rely on, you know, friendly judges to throw the election to them. Although they may hope that, I'm not sure.
And certainly they can then contest. They can, you know, contest the results and then maybe find another court, another judge that can look at it in a different way. Is that an issue?
Judges generally hate that. It's what they call forum shopping. They might try that, and they are kind of trying that. I mean, some of these claims they've made about observers not getting access have been thrown out by judges in Nevada and other places, saying, "Look, we're not going to let you just roam around, you know, the canvassing halls. Looking, you know, you're going to slow everything down. Social distancing is an issue." But they're trying those kinds of arguments again. I don't see any sign that they're more likely to succeed this time than last time, because these are really, I mean, these are arguments that are just not, they're a bit out there, put it that way.
Attorney Ian McDougall writes, ProPublica's Guide to 2020 Election Laws and Lawsuits. We're asking what happens when election lawsuits start mounting. What do you think about the way candidates responded to the results as the states have tallied votes? How did you observe the results of this election year? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ian McDougall here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with attorney Ian McDougall. He wrote ProPublica's Guide to Election Laws and Lawsuits. According to a Frontline analysis tracking lawsuits, there have been more than 400 election-related cases filed in the U.S. by political parties, campaign committees, activists, and individual voters this year. Let's bring in a call now. Dave is joining us from Appleton. Hi, Dave. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. All this talk about eliminating the Electoral College is foolish because the system works, and it's working now. And I'm really proud of every American citizen in this country that got out to vote. If the Electoral College was eliminated, you'd have like California and New York deciding what everybody else does in the middle. And that is just a recipe for disaster. The popular vote is what brought on Adolf Hitler in Germany. And people are getting so divided now. And people on the West Coast, East Coast, they just don't understand the middle. And in my own family, three sons, we're all different. And the whole country is different. But that's what makes us great.
Well, Dave, I want to pause there and bring in Ian here. Are there lawsuits that are putting the Electoral College at risk, at jeopardy?
No. That's in the Constitution. So you'd have to have a constitutional amendment to change that, which would require, I think it's 3/4 of the state's approval and also supermajorities of both houses of Congress. I don't think there's any risk of that changing anytime soon.
Well, in looking at the challenges to election results, what are the different ways to challenge an election, like election contests or protests versus a recount?
Yeah, there are really two main ways at the state level. One is a protest, which typically means saying, you know, some set of ballots or some, you know, were flawed or in some way or some precinct did something the wrong way, either by error or fraud. But you need to really prove that. So you can't just say, you know, I think something is wrong here. You have to have real evidence of it, which is where a lot of the lawsuits this election cycle have fallen short. The recount is there's sort of two kinds. One is if it's within a certain margin, a lot of states, there will be an automatic recount. Mm-hmm. In other instances, the parties may ask for them, but they usually has to be within, like I think in Wisconsin, it has to be within one percentage point, and the party asking for it has to pay for it unless it's within 0.25% difference.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, and that varies state by state, for a recount to happen, the election has to be really close, and even so, it almost never changes the outcome. I mean, even in Florida and the Bush versus Gore situation, I think the prevailing view is that, you know, even if the recount had been allowed to go on, Bush would have won still.
Okay, so timeline here, time frame. How long does it take to contest election results? How long do these courtroom battles go on? Because, you know, we know some litigation can go on for years and years.
Yeah, it's a good point. They try to move them pretty fast. I mean, especially with things like, you know, recount and the ballots challenges kind of thing. I mean, on the day of an election, many states have these election courts where you can go into a dedicated court in the county and they'll decide them kind of as you go. But they can sometimes go beyond, you know, the sort of period of the election result being done if there's some broader, you know, some broader legal issue that needs to be decided or something like that. But typically they do move them pretty quickly. It just, you know, they need to get the election certified by a certain date. So,
and I would imagine too, as you mentioned earlier, that evidence plays a huge role here. And when your process carries on and those ballots are all counted, you know, it may get harder and harder to get back to your evidence.
Yeah. I mean,
or well, might not. Yeah.
You mean in terms of if the count has been finished?
Yeah, at a particular poll site, or, you know, kind of recreating that evidence might be difficult.
Yeah, it cuts both ways. I think you're right that, I mean, you have to move quickly, and the lawyers, you know, election lawyers are used to doing that. They move very quickly, and you know, you see some of that with some of the Trump campaign's litigation trying to, you know, get. For, you know, essentially they're asking for things like, you know, when we didn't have enough access to the canvassing place, we want to see all those ballots and review them all, which is potentially a prelude to trying to find technicalities to challenge them on. You usually are not allowed to do that. And, you know, saying we want to be able to watch this, they need to move fast on that because the counts will be over, as you say, in the near future. On the other hand, you know, until the counts are done, sometimes it can be hard to really know whether it's going to make a difference, which is important because, you know, if you want to challenge 300 ballots, but you lost by 10,000 votes, it doesn't really, you know, and I'm not really sure what the point is. But the other thing is, you know, I think certain, you know, if there were certain irregularities or issues like that, you may not see them until, you know, a particular precinct is fully counted or things like that.
We're talking with Ian McDougall, contributing reporter at ProPublica's latest piece looks at states and laws that may determine the outcome, election lawsuits that he's watching. You can join in with your questions about the suits you're watching post-election day, 800-642-1234. Ian, I keep thinking, like, just with this flood of litigation, what is being pushed aside? What isn't being heard? Because now we have this flood of voting-related, election-related lawsuits.
That's a good question. I mean, I think there's still there are a few enough of them that they're probably not seriously disrupting the dockets of these courts. But yeah, if you had, you know, if you started filing dozens of them, and the courts have to set aside everything else and move quickly, yeah, that puts off, you know, hearing dates for criminal cases where someone might be waiting in jail for a trial or a hearing or something, puts off civil cases. I mean, it certainly at a certain point it could become disruptive. In fairness, I don't think that's happened yet, or I haven't seen evidence of it. But you're right; it could if it really kind of gets out of hand. That certainly is possible.
Okay, so what lawsuits in particular are you watching at this moment?
I think the ones that are most interesting because they have probably the highest chance of success. Although I don't know exactly how high, are the ones that are pending either at the Supreme Court or could come back to them soon. So that is Wisconsin was already decided more or less by the court that they put a block on that sort of post-election buffer period for mail-in ballots to arrive, but they haven't ruled or just even decided whether they're going to rule in a similar case in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. And it doesn't look right now like those are, again, just the ballots that arrive after the election day. And there usually aren't that many of them. And it doesn't sound like there are that many of them this year. And so if those aren't, you know, dispositive, then those cases aren't as important. However, what is really important is there are now four justices that have kind of gotten behind this new theory that, you know, state legislatures alone control election administration. And so, you know, the state constitution can't apply to them because the state Supreme Court couldn't ever overturn them. Governor couldn't veto election administration laws because it's just the legislature that the constitution assigns to control those things. If that becomes the prevailing view, so actually it came up in Bush versus Gore. There was a concurrence by Chief Justice Rehnquist about it. If that becomes the law, and it has already led to one ruling in a federal appeals court, that would have some very serious long-term implications for election administration. It could be people who study this stuff say quite destabilizing because you'd have, you know, you have to do one thing for election laws for federal elections, another for state elections.
Oh, goodness.
You know, if for 200 years, legislatures have been assuming they're operating like normal lawmaking bodies where the governor can veto their laws and they're subject to the Constitution. Now, suddenly, that was all wrong. It would be very hard to figure out what the contours of that are, and it could be quite disruptive. But, you know, we may, even if not this election, we may in the near term see that become the law of the land by way of the Supreme Court. And that sort of first become a possibility with these cases that are still pending before the court. So I'm very interested to see where that goes.
Ian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ian McDougall is a lawyer and contributing reporter at ProPublica. Just ahead, we continue our coverage of the election with an Emory University political scientist in Atlanta giving her take on the fate of Georgia's 16 electoral votes and what may play out in the remaining swing states that remain, you know, in a toss-up. How do you think the 2020 election is unfolding? What would you like to say? It's 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.